And we're talking with three American Muslims who are all students at the University of Illinois, but have come from very different experiences. Aisha Sob is born and raised in the Midwest, in the Western states. And you became a Muslim at what age?
At 19.
At age 19, which was a few years ago now.
Yes.
you're a graduate student in history at the University of Illinois. Ibrahima Ndoye?
Yes.
You're from Senegal, mm-hmm. but you've lived in the United States now for quite a few years.
Yes, indeed, since 1987.
And you're a graduate student in the French department of the University of Illinois. And our only undergrad is Saul Ahmed.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents are from India,
right?
But you're from the Chicago suburbs.
That's right.
And you're studying economics here at the University of Illinois.
Right.
Okay. Who here has kids?
I do.
And so do I.
Okay. Well, both Ibrahima and Saud, how old are they, Ibrahima?
My firstborn is three years old, and my second is what, 14 months. And she's a girl, baby girl. So.
Mm-hmm. Your oldest, a toddler, has that child had to deal or be aware of what's happened in America with the September 11th attacks?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, he hasn't had to deal with that at all. He's very unaware of whatever happened. He goes to preschool, and I'm not aware of anything that they may have said to them or to him particularly when he at school. But as far as home, no, he hasn't really had to face any of that at all. He just doesn't seem to be aware of it. He hasn't asked any questions in that reference. So,
mm-hmm. Is that something you worry about as he gets older, and if the situation here with the United States goes on into years, that it's something you'll have to talk about and talk about it as a Muslim family in a country that's mostly not Muslim?
Oh, yes, indeed. I certainly will have to address that with his name is Omar. With Omar. And, yes, he is going to be raised as a Muslim in a non-Muslim country. Therefore, he would certainly have to be aware of the history of Islam, not only as a whole, but really within the context of the United States itself. And in that process, I'm sure I would have to bring up the issue of, for example, what happened in New York. And I am certainly not concerned about it. And I think I'm in a position where I can address it in a way that won't be any shocking to him. And it's just, as he grows up also in an environment, in a Muslim environment, it's just going to be a natural, process of acquisition here. So.
Mm-hmm. Aisha, how old are your children?
Well, I have five children. The youngest is 9 and the oldest is 21. And I have one child each in elementary, middle school, high school, and at the university.
All being raised as Muslims?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
How have they reacted to the attacks on September 11th and the aftermath here in this country?
Well, I think some of the reactions have changed as time has gone by. The very first couple of days, I think for my high schooler and the one in middle school were a little bit upset from things people were saying, but it basically passed. And my daughter, who is a junior, has been involved in various organizations on campus trying to bring more information about Islam to the students on campus, and engaged in various panel discussions arranging for those to help educate Americans.
So do your kids have any problems with stereotyping? Are they someone who, from the way that their peers see them, that they would take to be from the Mideast? Or?
No, not really. The only thing that, I mean, they don't look particularly Middle Eastern. Their names are different, obviously being Muslim names. But my daughter, like myself, wears hijab. She covers her hair and wears, you know, loose clothing. And there are a lot of students, Muslim women students, who do wear that on campus. So she hasn't really experienced any harassment or anything. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that people really know, okay, well, she's a Muslim. Maybe now they are, but they know something's different, but they don't necessarily know why.
Saud, how has it been for you? And maybe I could ask, do you have younger brothers and sisters as well?
Well, I do have a younger sister, but my parents don't live in the country as of now. Like 3 years ago, about 19, or 4 years ago, 97, 98, our family moved to the Middle East, to Bahrain. My dad had a job transfer there. And particularly, they're more so worried about me living here because I feel that in the rest of the world, they think that Muslims are being hunted down here in America for some odd reason. From what you see on TV and stuff, like especially the first couple days of the situation. And I'm happy to say that it isn't that situation, especially living on campus. I feel that there's been a very positive, atmosphere on campus. I see a lot of people, coming and finding out more about Islam. One of the top-selling books right now actually is the Quran, which is, our holy book. And I think just people want to learn more. They want to, instead of looking at Islam as just a mysterious religion, people on campus want to just, find out more and see what is this word in the news all about.
Ibrahima, yes. your experiences on campus, how have people reacted to you as a Muslim since September 11th?
I really haven't had any hostile manifestation at all towards me, or any hostility really expressed towards me. And I also teach at Parkland College, where I certainly have approached the issue with my students, and in the process of those discussions and debates, a very cordial, communication and atmosphere certainly did prevail, and absolutely no hostility. And whatnot. No, I must say that I really did not have, for some reason, though, I just never drove myself to think that I was in any imminent danger. I don't know, I was just carrying myself in the most natural way. Perhaps, then again, that the environment I was evolving in was showing me that maybe I didn't have anything to really fear.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, what were your own personal reactions mm-hmm. when you heard of heard about the attacks, mm-hmm. and then also of the American response and the military strikes in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. My initial response was that of disbelief.
That is to the attacks?
Yes, to the attacks. That of disbelief. I tried to understand. I tried to analyze the situation, to understand where from that could be coming. And it was just not really materializing in terms of thoughts. And then I started to listen to the news, to watch the TV programs. And then it started dawning upon me that this is coming from a Muslim perspective. And the extent of the damage, the extent of the horror was such that here I am in class, and I was discussing the issues with my students, and I'm talking about a particular example where one company lost about 700 people, and I'm explaining and discussing, and then the next thing I know, I was crying like a baby in front of my students in class. That is just how bad this had actually affected me, really. And, of course, I have tried to explain that this has nothing to do with Islam. This is not the Islam that we know. It has absolutely nothing to do with the tenets of the Islamic faith. No real or good Muslim would do any such thing. No decent thinking Muslim would attempt to participate in any activity that would be killing innocent people. No. So that's really my initial reaction to it. And, of course, at this point, then, with the U.S. reaction to the military response to this incident, I am certainly, I'm not impressed at all with the duality of the military response, which is so-called humanitarian aid to people that you are destroying, to people that you are killing. That certainly does not impress me, and I think the more I think of it, the more I find it really unnecessary, in the sense that here you are, here at least the U.S. Is waging a war upon people whom you would, even somebody else the other day on the David Letterman show said, it seems as though it is a war on the Flintstones, a war that America is waging on the Flintstones. And from just looking at it that way, I find it really outrageous and unnecessary and totally unfortunate for the innocent that innocent people that are going to be added to the 6,000 or so dead already that we have in New York.
Aisha, what were your thoughts?
Well, at the beginning, I was also, I mean, just really, really, really shocked. And at first, I was not going to accept immediately the idea that, well, it's some Middle Eastern, it's Bin Laden, whatever. Considering what happened in Oklahoma City, I had other suspects in mind as well. And then when it came that it seems that these are the people involved, I have no love for the Taliban whatsoever. I mean, I would really like to see them gone. On the other hand, I know that there really is nothing to replace them with. And at the same time, I feel very badly. I mean, these people are going to be suffering, as Ibrahima said, so terribly. And I'm also deeply, deeply suspicious about what is going to happen to our society here because of this, regarding civil rights, regarding the treatment of Muslims, people from the Middle East in particular. And I also feel rather unhappy about the direction that the society is taking, in the sense that it's either my way or the highway. It's either, you know, we're 100% in every single thing that's going on, or somehow we're excusing or rationalizing what took place when these are separate issues. So that, you know, being a good patriot, it doesn't mean taping a flag on your window. It means paying attention to what's going on in your society, educating yourself and others as to what's really going on, and being active citizens who really urge their society and their government to adhere to international law all the way, so that, you know, whatever we do, we're not going to be blamed for creating an even bigger mess.
Saud, has your thoughts been along these same lines?
Much to that same extent. I mean, like, as with everyone, you know, when I saw that plane flying into the building on TV, it just seemed like something out of one of those Die Hard movies or something like that. It just didn't seem real. It seemed so surreal. It was like, it didn't look real. I mean, like, I was in chemistry class that day. I had a laboratory. And some girl just came in yelling that, yeah, some plane hit one of the buildings in New York. And I was like, seriously, listen to an ad for a commercial for a movie or something. It just didn't seem like, you know, whatever. And when I came home, when I saw it on TV, it just was just shocking. And, you know, first it was, I was just, my fear was first for the people in the building. Like, you know, you see those images of people jumping off the building to save their lives and everything. It was just horrendous. And, but after, you know, that first, like, 15 or 20 minutes of, you know, you know, it almost dawned on me, as like, you know, what does it mean for Muslims in America, you know? Where does that take us? Because, you know, for the last, at least, you know, ever since Oklahoma bombing, you know, I think people in America have grown to, you know, maybe understand that, you know, Islam isn't the only, you know, it's not this religion of terrorism, you know. It's like, you know, we just immediately stereotype Islam for being this religion that bombs America. And I think ever since that, we've gone a long way. In a situation like this, in a situation like in the World Trade Center, you know, almost takes us back a little bit. And, but I'm, for the initial response from the media and everything did shock me a little bit, because one of the images that was repeated on TV was the images of the Palestinian, like, children and villagers, like, sitting there dancing on TV. And that to me was really bad media business, because that was a small population there, and you're basing that of the whole population. And so I didn't see the relevance of that. And in fact, I thought that would just cause more American people to build up their rage against Muslims or Arab people in America. So I didn't see the reason behind that. But I do think that the later actions by the president and by the media to hopefully resolve, you know, any situation against Muslims in America was much better. And I think it shows how much of a way we've come since Oklahoma. But in terms of being a American citizen in this country, you know, there's a certain, like, you know, there is a certain dilemma. You know, it was like, you know, it's just where to think, where to go. I mean, for right now, I mean, like, it was almost like to be an American, you had to have your American flag. You had to have, you know, hold it, put your flag in your car and everything like that. And as much as I'd like to think that, I mean, if you just sit there and follow your country blindly, that isn't really the way of being a true American. In fact, I mean, to paraphrase John F. Kennedy, I mean, to be a true patriot and American is during your country's time of, like, you know, when they have rallied up this extreme patriotism, it's just that being the one who can think critically of your country, even within beyond all of this blindness. And in fact, I think we should be critical of our country. I mean, even though, and that would be make us more American, to see whether this action against Afghanistan is really the right course to take. And personally, as much as I condemn the act against World Trade Center and the bombing and the attack on that, I also condemn the act against Afghanistan, because the fact is, most of the people living there have no clue what's going on. In fact, they are just living their lives just to live their lives, because they have nothing to live for in any case.
Well, you've all spoken to me about your deep reservations, and that may be a mild term, about the U.S. response, about the military action in Afghanistan. What's the alternative? And especially for a nation which I think their top priority is getting rid of international terrorist attacks on their soil, what's the alternative that's going to solve the problem?
But you know, the problem is the focus is not so much at this point really on the soil of the United States itself in terms of getting rid of the of terrorists. How really is it likely to be successful when this country, the ideal, the number one ideal of this country is its cosmopolitan aspect and its acceptance and openness to others and to different cultures and whatnot? And then you are going to think of getting rid of terrorism on your soil by targeting people that may have absolutely nothing to do with it, but who happen to be of, let's say, Arab origin, or may look like Arabs, because then again we have people from other countries, non-Arab countries, that have been mistaken for Arabs and who have certainly suffered or who have had to bear the brunt of, people's anger. So it is very difficult at this point, if we are to really eradicate this ill, this illness, this this problem, really here within the confines of the United States itself. It is going to be very difficult, because there will be lots of infringement upon the very ideals of America, but of course upon being also the rights of the very people that live in this country who happen to look like Arabs. The infringement upon their rights would certainly just send this country so far behind, so far back, that it is very, very important for the United States to devise a very subtle way of trying to fight terrorism on its own soil. Just to make sure that, while making sure, of course, that really you are not, then again, really taking away the rights of people to live a normal, free American life.
So if that's not the right way to do it, what is the right way to do it?
The right way. What would be the right way? It is so difficult to come up with the right way, yes.
I would say that, you know, sometimes I've thought about this. You know, when you have, now I'm not talking about terrorism per se, but groups or people who feel they have grievances such that they're legitimate and they're being oppressed, repressed, that something like in South Africa's Truth Commission, that if there was a kind of international forum for these grievances, you know, one by one from all these many different countries to be addressed. One of the things I noticed is there seems to be this somewhat comforting claim that we were chosen, the United States was chosen for what it is, you know, for what it stands for. And really, that's not the point. The point is that as an American society, we claim to uphold all kinds of very honorable ideals, that people are not oppressed, that everyone has the freedom to say what they want, to meet, they have certain rights. And then if it's perceived that American interests, whether they're governmental or commercial, go into a country and contribute to oppression, repression, death, violence, this is what is really appears to be most egregious. So if there were some sort of international, truly international, not a Security Council, not something where certain persuasions are weighted, but where grievances could be looked at seriously, and we understand that it's not about strategic positions or who is able to control certain economic or military assets. You know, something like the United Nations, but the United Nations doesn't really have any weight to actually do anything or to require anything. Another would be that the United States, as I said before, adheres to international law, that we listen to decisions that are taken to the World Court and accept them and obey them, rather than sometimes, you know, making our own unilateral decisions and, you know, it's either you accept it or you don't. We're going to do it our own way.
Do you feel comfortable talking along those lines to other Americans, to non-Muslim Americans, or do you think they just won't sit still to appreciate the argument?
Well, I'll tell you, I have participated in quite a few panels since this event at the university. And I personally, I have no qualms whatsoever talking to anybody about any of this, my own personal views. But I do perceive that at all of these talks, for the most part, you're preaching to the choir. They're already, these are people who pretty much understand and are thinking along the same lines. You know, they're not necessarily Muslim, but they have a more broad and educated view about what's going on in the world. However, when I open up the News Gazette, for example, and I read columnists' articles by writers such as Cal Thomas, or just sort of the run-of-the-mill letters to the editor that are printed, I'm really, you know, I realize that there is a very large segment of people out there who are not on the same wavelength at all. When I listen to the regular mainstream media, when I get on, I mean, just get on MSN Messenger and they'll have, or Yahoo, and they'll have certain topics and they allow people to type in replies, okay? When I read these replies, they are just horrible, awful. I mean, they're just so extreme, so completely different than what I'm thinking to, you know, just like, just go and bomb them all, just kill all the Muslims, Islam is this, Islam is that. And it shows a real lack of, I would say, you know, education. But I know that there are a lot of people out there.
Saud, here on campus, talking with other students, have you ever had a chance to talk about, you know, talk about some of the concerns we're talking about right here, frankly, with non-Muslims, with people who may not be automatically sympathetic mm-hmm. to an alternative to what the federal government is doing now in Afghanistan?
Well, I have a couple non-Muslim friends. A few of them aren't on this campus as well. Some of them are in U of the Indiana University in Bloomington. And we've discussed this. And in fact, to, you know, which I'm not really surprised, but they already jumped up and said the same, probably the same thoughts and ideas that Sister Aisha was talking about, how, you know, they are, you know, condemning the act against Afghanistan, and more so, like, just the situations of what they say in America. I mean, I, too, have been online, and I've checked out numerous different websites, even non-news websites, just, like, you know, I guess, like, you know, you can go to computer websites, whatnot, and they have all those forums on situations, and it's really shocking to see what people think. I mean, there it gets so crazy where, you know, some of them do say, just want to just kill the Muslims, just get them out of this country. And because, you know, obviously, you know, they're not American, you know, they don't live, you know, they don't deserve to live here and whatnot. And I think it's kind of sad because I thought we came a long way since, you know, for the last seven or eight years, I know, where we actually understand, you know, that maybe we shouldn't jump to conclusions. Maybe we shouldn't just say that, you know, stereotype a whole, you know, religion, whole people. And it's sad to see that. As with people on campus specifically, I was interviewed by a few people from different news agencies and different, like, you know, there's a U of I alumni magazine that came and interviewed us. And I was pretty much open to speak with them exactly what was on my mind, in the sense that to be more critical, but also, you know, in the sense that, you know, just to see what I feel should not be the right course of action, see what may possibly be a different way of resolving the situation.
This is Focus 580 on AM 580 WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and my guests are three members of Champaign-Urbana's Muslim community, Saud Ahmed, Ibrahima Nadoy, and Aisha Soap. They're discussing their views of the September 11th attacks and the events since then. This discussion was recorded last week, so we're unable to take your calls on the air this hour. Well, you know, the discussion I've heard here and the discussion I've heard from other Muslims, I'm wondering if it lacks what perhaps Americans are looking for in a plan of action. And even those who may disagree with what currently the federal government is doing, they can at least see something direct, which is, you know, go to Afghanistan, overthrow the Taliban, get Osama bin Laden and the people working with him, who we believe are at the seat of the terrorist movement which attacked Washington and New York in September. What is an alternative plan which is that straightforward, which sounds like it has a solution in sight?
Honestly, it's to sit there and look at the root of the terrorist. You know, what is the – and it's almost like you're looking at a disease. You don't sit there and try to cure the symptoms, because that's not going to help, because you're still going to have this disease still growing. The fact is, you have to hit basically kill the virus at its roots, and you know, that's how you could solve the problem. So I think as an American people, we have to find out, you know, what is it that is causing this whole commotion? Why is this whole thing started? I mean, prior to 1950, there was no Islamic terrorist. I mean, people didn't come to this country and, you know, bomb it up because, you know, Islamic terrorism and whatnot. But it seems to be this thing that happened ever since, like, since the 70s. So we're saying, like, you know, why did it start? You know, America's been there for a while, you know, at least 200 years. It hasn't happened before. Why is it happening now? And just to be thinking about that. And maybe we can find out by, you know, understanding the situation at its roots, you know, hopefully work with that.
Ibrahima?
Yes, perhaps the roots of it could be certainly traced to back to the political involvement. Socioeconomic and economic or political involvement of America, perhaps in some of these Arab nations, and at the same time, the image that America seems to project, almost as the police of the world, whereby all these decisions, and Sister Aisha did touch upon that, and well, these decisions are unilaterally made, and what the world body makes in terms of decision, then America would not abide by, and whatnot. Those are, you know, little things when put together, would eventually give this extremely arrogant image, present an arrogant image of a nation, and whatnot. Now, that's what, unfortunately, seems to have been the situation, in the sense that American involvement in different spheres of the world seems to, in many ways, to really infringe upon the liberties and all the decision-making processes of different countries and whatnot. And therefore, giving America this image of being the number one bully in the world, and that, I think, can be viewed as perhaps the root or a source of the problem, and therefore, perhaps then the United States should simply sit down truly and reconsider its foreign policy, really and understand also that the world is not. That America, in fact, is not the world. That America is part of the world. And therefore, You cannot be part of something and then live separately from that thing. So America should then perhaps start thinking and understanding much better than, it should really participate in the functioning or in the gestation of the world, with politics, world economics, and whatnot, in a more human fashion, instead of really projecting this image of really being a bully.
The question you asked, they're sort of telling you the long term, and I had the feeling you were asking also about a short term.
And that's something interesting to bring up, because that is something that would have its effect, I think, over the course of years. And perhaps the al-Qaeda movement, upon hearing that America was changing its foreign policy stances, would not automatically say, okay, we won't do this anymore. Right. We will now only seek peaceful means of restoring the Islamic Caliphate.
Right. You know, I think, I mean, okay, this is just my personal opinion, all right? And one is that we missed a few opportunities. I mean, at first, we didn't immediately start military action, which was good. But at the same time, there were a few periods of time where it looked like Taliban was asking to make some sort of negotiation, and Bush said, no negotiation whatsoever. What I had hoped for would have been a kind of negotiation that would result in bin Laden being tried in an international type of court, okay? And the other thing is that it will, when you bomb people, the children that survive grow up, and they have a big chip on their shoulder. So this isn't really, it's going to perpetuate a lot of problems. But there are several fronts that are particularly, there really will be no peace in those areas until they're taken care of. For example, Kashmir, Palestine and Israel, those issues, what's going to happen in Lebanon. I mean, many areas which there's this constant turmoil. If it's not all-out war, it's very low-level problems. One of a very strong contributing factor is the weapons industry. We are, whether it's commercially or by government, we are a country with others that is selling lots of weapons to governments, to various groups, and I would rather, instead of seeing that, I was just imagining creating something like what we have at the Peace Corps in the United States, but making it like on a much, much larger scale, making it international and establishing NGOs that go to a lot of these countries, I'm talking about besides foreign policy, that would go and do things that are actually going to educate people, give them the basics that are required for a decent human life, and then at the same time, the foreign policy. But we need to be in step with the rest of the world. In other words, something like a United Nations, or maybe within it, but very strongly backing it. You know, the United States hasn't paid its bill to the UN for I don't know how long, but something that shows that, we're going to do something positive rather than negative. Mm-hmm. Oh, and one other thing is that, because this is my area, modern Middle East studies, is that the people in this country, as well as the government, they still know very little about that part of the world. We need to increase funding and encourage more people to go into it. One of the problems I can see already on the popular news is that the people who the talking heads that you see up there, that you see over and over, are people who give certain kinds of answers. And there are many, many other academic specialists who are very well respected by their peers who are not up there because they're not giving the same kind of answers. So rather than you're in because you're telling them what they want, or you're telling them so that they can somehow manipulate a certain kind of situation, is different than trying to learn on the terms of the people you're studying what they're all about.
Actually, I wanted to comment also on something that Sister Aisha said. I just wanted to finish that, to what she was referring to. Your last question was about how, Al-Qaeda, even though we will try to, if we do whatever, do anything on foreign policy, they're still going to try to attack us. In that sense, that's true. You know, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, all those other groups, their intention is never – it's not for – you know, if they are terrorists and their intention is to hurt people, that is what it is. But I think by having these foreign policies on against Iraq, you know, with the policy with Saudi Arabia, with Palestine, America's inducing people, the people of that land who really are just suffering, to join people like Al-Qaeda, you know, to join these groups because they seem to have no other output. And that's sad. You know, if we could just limit, you know, having people come to them, because we're showing that, you know, listen, we're America and we're not this type of evil country that these people are presenting, you know, because we're not going to do this to you. We're not going to, you know, take away your human rights. We're not going to make you starve like in Iraq. If they could show that to the regular people, not to the terrorists. We're not here to appease a terrorist. We're here to appease the people who are the innocent. And if you could show the innocents that how we are, they wouldn't want to go to Al-Qaeda. They wouldn't want to team up with Osama bin Laden. And that way, the power of Al-Qaeda and all the other terrorist network will drop because they're not going to have people to follow them. I mean, that's just basically what I wanted to finish that comment. Mm-hmm. And again, I think I answered the one on mm-hmm. American media and Islam.
Well, and maybe do you think that might be a hard argument to make to the American people right now?
It is a hard argument.
You know, Osama bin Laden has himself started taking up some of those same foreign policy arguments in the last couple of video statements that he released. He brought up the Israeli-Palestine issue as being something important for America to take action on, and I was struck by that incident a few weeks ago where a Saudi prince visited New York City, made a very generous gift. Thank you very much for the name. And made a very generous gift to the relief efforts mm-hmm. there, but then also issued a press release calling for that same change in American foreign policy as regards Israel and Palestine, which angered Mayor Giuliani of New York, mm-hmm. who returned the gift and essentially accused the prince of recommending appeasement.
I think the situation is different because if you look at Osama bin Laden and his group and their appeasement in referring to Palestine and Israel, and stop me if I'm wrong in any of the situation, but I think they want a really different situation than what the whole Muslim world want. I mean, I think they basically seriously want a country where they can just kick out all the other religions and just make a Muslim state and just have Muslims in there and, you know, kick out the Jews, kick out the Christians. And basically they want to establish, you know, just complete a different type of system than what other people think. The people who are asking for, you know, like when you have that Saudi prince or people like the Americans in America, Muslims in America, they're talking about the foreign policy in Palestine or something like that. It's not about destroying the evil, you know, Jews in the country and you know, making an Islamic state. No, it's about giving the people their human rights. It's about the Palestinians there who are just being, you know, their homes being destroyed because of, you know, they need to expand the state of Israel and whatnot. And, you know, that's what a lot of the Muslim people in this country are talking about, or in the rest of the world, hopefully, save for those terrorist networks. Mm-hmm. Now, and again, it may sound, and unfortunately, because of the lack of education or knowledge on the situation of Palestine or in Iraq or in various other countries that America has involvements in the Middle East, they believe that, you know, there is just one side to this issue and that all Muslims, the terrorists, the non-terrorists, whatever, think the same way, which is totally not true. You know, I will never agree with the way Osama bin Laden thinks. You know, I'll never agree in his course of action he takes against people who disagree with him, you know, if there's any way to solve this problem by a Muslim is to do it by complete means of, you know, of peace, by means of word of mouth instead of, you know, the gun. And I understand how the American people would completely feel, you know, resentment towards anyone who asked for appeasement for any situation like Palestine and whatnot. And maybe that isn't something maybe that's something because of the lack of education. And again, I just want to tell the people that it's not the same thing that Osama bin Laden wants, because in fact, if those guys are willing to kill 6,000 people, you know, innocent people in a building, what's to say that their objective is to have this peaceful state in Palestine or the peaceful, like, you know, situations in any other country in the world? And
mm-hmm. Ibrahim, when you look at when you think ahead of what's going to be happening in the next few years, stemming from the attacks on September 11th. You consider your view optimistic or pessimistic?
It is difficult to say in these presently, currently, because the situation is very chaotic. And, of course, the attack on Afghanistan is certainly not helping in terms of establishing a pessimistic environment, at least the elements that should make anybody feel really optimistic, I meant to say. That should make anybody feel optimistic in the sense that what we are seeing today, very many people in the world, especially the Muslims, they are seeing what's happening today in Afghanistan as no more than the, or no less than the perpetuation of the of this very negative image that the U.S. Has really projected out there. The problems that Osama bin Laden seems to have convened in order to sort of justify his action, which are by no means justifiable, but the problems that he seems to be conjuring up, they happen to be before the eyes of any Muslims. Well, they happen to be issues, legitimate issues before the eyes of Muslims. And, of course, he is certainly putting somewhat of a stain on these issues because they are extremely legitimate issues that all Muslims throughout the world, whether it is the question in reference to the Kashmir situation, the question of Muslims throughout the Middle East and whatnot, especially I'm talking about Palestine, those are issues that are extremely legitimate before the eyes of Muslims and even non-Muslims, really. But the way that the U.S. seems to be going about it really makes it quite difficult to feel optimistic in the sense that what the objective of it is somewhat going to go awry in the sense that people are going once again to feel that other Muslim families, brothers and sisters, because that's the notion of closeness that Muslims have. You know, they are going to feel that their other brothers and sisters out there are being destroyed and whatnot by a powerful nation such as the U.S., and therefore might find some other ways of reacting, or even without it being in any coordinated form.
Well, let me ask this of the history student at this point, Aisha. If Osama bin Laden has managed to essentially frame the debate, and American policy has unwittingly played into that, what sort of changes would need to be done, and especially in the immediate future, that would help America frame the debate and win larger parts of the Islamic community around the world to its side?
Well, for one thing, I want to refuse Osama bin Laden framing the debate. I don't accept it at all, because those debates were all there before. Before the September 11th, there were many people, Muslim and non-Muslim, working to bring the public to the understanding of what is really going on in the world, that there are 3,000 or 4,000 children dying every month in Iraq because of the sanctions that have been placed that do not hurt Saddam Hussein or his cronies, but they hurt the children and just the everyday citizens. So these type of issues were, people were working very, very hard, and in this town as well. And it's a matter of trying to educate the public as well. And it seems to me that one of the important aspects of changing our foreign policy in this country has not been from the top down. It has been from the people of the United States who have become educated and who began a groundswelling of grassroots support for or against certain policies, as we witnessed during the Vietnam War. This is what I see as going to be much more fruitful than all of a sudden the United States government or certain multinational companies deciding that they really don't need those strategic advantages or economic advantages. So, but Those issues that, as I said, people were working on include things like about Kashmir, Palestine, so on and so forth, Iraq, Bosnia, Somalia, Sudan, and, you know, many other places. And that is that we need to be very careful that we distinguish what the people of a country need and what its rulers want and what we want. I mean, there has to be some point we care so much about our citizens in this country that they have, supposedly, that they have their basic needs met. We have to have the same standards for people outside of our country as we do inside.
Well, this is a discussion which I think is going to be going on, going on for years, I think. And this is only scratching one part of the surface. But I wanted to thank you as American Muslims for coming to join us in this conversation. And Aisha Sob, Ibrahim Ndoye, and Saud Ahmed, I'm sure this is something we'll be wrangling with for a long time to come. But thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you for having us.